This is Perry Marshall, and I'm here with John Lee Dumas. And John is getting to where his reputation precedes him because he's created this thing called the Entrepreneur on Fire podcast, which has gone crazy. And it's rocketed to the top of the charts. And John, I think he's, if I might say so myself, he's got like the perfect radio personality and loves to reach out and have these conversations with people. And, you know, John, sounds like you found the perfect thing to do here. And I wanted to talk to you about, well, how this came about and some of the twists and turns and what you've learned from it. And I think, you know, podcasting's been one of these things where, well, it's a really cool idea, and there are, you know, some, like, really successful podcasts out there, but there's an awful lot of just mediocre ones or ones that never took off or never found their audience. A lot of them that have never figured out how to make any money. So, but you've cracked the code on all those things, and so let's talk. Welcome.
Well, Perry, thanks for having me, and you couldn't be more right. There have been an incredible amount of twists and turns in my life just as a human, you know, let alone as an entrepreneur, which has only been going on for me for a little over 2 years, and I'd love to kind of expound upon that in a little bit. But it does come down to one of those things, and to hear you, Perry Marshall, saying that you know you think I have a great radio/broadcasting personality, it all just points back to not being willing to settle into something until I really felt like it was authentically me, like really continuing to have the courage to quit, Perry, time and time again. And I've had to quit some really big things. I mean, we can get into it, but law school, corporate finance, you know, six-figure golden handcuff job, you name it. Like, I've quit some really big things in life because I knew that my thing was out there. I just didn't know what that thing was, Perry, but I kept swinging the bat. Finally, at the age of 32 years old, which for some people is young, for some people is old to find their thing, but I hit the ball, and so far it's been quite a ride. I'd have to give it a grand slam status thus far.
Hey, well, you know, when you hit a grand slam and you're enjoying it, I mean, that is really marvelous. And not everybody enjoys their grand slams. Like, Jerry Seinfeld eventually got tired of doing Seinfeld, right? But, you know, you're swinging and you're loving it. So, well, why don't you back up and talk to me about, you know, some of the stuff that you did have to quit and some of the, you know, taking bitter medicine with that. Back up to wherever in the story you feel is appropriate and give us a bird's eye view.
Yeah, let me give you the quick bird's eye view, Perry, because it has been quite the story. Because I came from a real small town in Maine, went to college on an Army ROTC scholarship. So my first real career was as an officer in the U.S. Army right during the pretty heavy-duty time. You know, I was an officer from 2002 to 2006. So I did my 13-month tour of duty over in Iraq in charge of 4 tanks, 16 men. You know, I was there for the 13-month bloodiest time that you could be in Iraq, like the siege of Fallujah. You know, I led men into battle, you know, for those 13 months, countless times. So I really saw it all. And that really shaped my young 20s, so to speak. And what it really did was it really made me realize, number one, like how short life is. And number two, how precious life is. But number three, also that, you know, we have this opportunity. And I was thinking that if I had the opportunity to make it back and to live a life, that I was never going to settle for something that was less than what I felt like I deserved and that anybody deserves, which is living a life on fire. And so for me, that was getting back and, you know, finishing out my last tour of duty with the Army and transitioning to the civilian world. And I tried a number of things, Perry. I went to law school thinking that that might be my thing, and it wasn't. So I quit and I walked away. And that was not easy, Perry, because my father was a lawyer. He was so proud of me. You know, my family had judges and lawyers galore in it, and they were all excited that I was on this path. And to be frank, it was the first time that I was really embarrassed about my life. Because up to that point, you know, I was 27 years old. I had done all the right things. You know, I'd gone to law school. I had gone to college. I had served our country in a time of war. You know, I was a decorated combat veteran as a captain in the U.S. Army. And then now here I was, a law school dropout. And it was a really weird transition, Perry, to go from 27 years of people really admiring and respecting your journey to being like, whoa, this kid, he's headed for trouble. So I tried to correct path and I went into corporate finance and I was there for 18 months with John Hancock and didn't hate it. But, you know, after 18 months, I definitely burned out of that. So then I tried commercial and residential real estate and both of those ventures had some financial successes. But again, it just wasn't me. And fast forward to 32 years old. So now I'm 6 years removed from the Army of 6 years of just trying different careers and failing and falling on my face and being, you know, embarrassed and kind of clueless about the direction of my life.
Well, at least law school gave you a refund when you asked for it, right? I'm not satisfied. You know, I didn't like that book. Well, I'm gonna do a chargeback on my credit card if you don't come. Right?
I love it, Barry. Yeah, $20,000. I'm still waving goodbye to it. So see you later. But hey, it was the best $20,000 that I said goodbye to because I didn't want to compound my mistake of going to law school with another 2.5 years of bills and mistakes. So, you know, finally, though, at 32, Perry, I settled on this idea that there are people that are out there that are providing incredibly valuable content via books. So I was listening to audiobooks every single day as I was driving into work and driving back. But to be honest with you, that gets a little pricey when you're going through about one audiobook a day. And then I stumbled into podcasts and I was like, free, on-demand, targeted content, sign me up. And that's where I fell in love with the medium. And that's where I saw a void existed, Perry, because I was running out of the podcast because I was listening to them every single day, multiple times per day, driving to and from work to appointments. And I saw the void in the marketplace, which was nobody was doing a 7-day-a-week podcast interviewing inspiring and successful entrepreneurs. So back in September 2012, Perry, I launched Entrepreneur on Fire. Here we are over 700 episodes later. We've been awarded Best of iTunes in 2013. I've been featured in Time, Inc., Forbes, Entrepreneur Magazine, and, you know, have generated over 9 million downloads. And I'm running, you know, a multiple seven-figure business, Entrepreneur on Fire.
Didn't you say something in another conversation where, like, nobody thought that anybody would want a podcast every day? Or didn't somebody say that to you? I seem to recall.
Well, even more important than just somebody, Perry, my mentor, who was a successful podcaster, said, John, there's no way you can find 365 entrepreneurs to interview on a yearly basis. And then in my mastermind, you know, I was in a mastermind of who was considered the godfather of podcasts, and he said, John, nobody wants to listen to a 7-day-a-week podcast. They are going to get burnt out. Just do a once-a-week podcast. So the two people that I respected most in my industry that I was looking to get into, and this is even before I launched, Perry, were both telling me, no, don't do that. There's a lot of bad reasons to do that. And I'll tell you, instead of really getting me down, that only inspired me more because I said, you know what? I know they're wrong because I want a 7-day-a-week podcast. And if I want a 7-day-a-week podcast, there must be other people out there that want it too. And if the top people in the industry are saying it can't be done, therein lies a massive opportunity. So I put on my blinders, Perry. I drove forward and I did it.
Well, you know, I have a perspective on, you know, would people want something like this? And it's, you know, 80-20 says, you know, if 100 people will give you $100, well, then that probably means that 10 people will give you $1,000. And if 100 people will listen once a week, 10 will listen every day. And it's it's almost a law of physics. Now, what John, what I think you're tapping into that's really genius is you're only getting the people who have a huge appetite.
Right.
Okay, and that is the hyper-responsive customer, and that's who you really want, because that's who, like, well, if they want a podcast every day, that means they're still not getting all they want.
No, that's exactly right. I think that's a great point that you're making is my listeners, whom I lovingly refer to as Fire Nation, are the most engaged, the most excited, the most inspired listeners of podcasts. And I get people all the time that were on Entrepreneur on Fire that are also on many other podcasts that say, John, it's crazy. Like after your episode, my episode on Entrepreneur on Fire went live, like your listeners were just like emailing and tweeting and they were there and they're just like, they're so into it and they are engaging and they're just like, well done. Like you have the audience that is that hyper reactive audience that Perry, you nailed. That's exactly it.
And so now could you talk about like where this is in the whole universe of business podcasts, like how this rank and like what niches? Could you just describe like kind of where you are in the fray?
Absolutely. So within podcasting, iTunes is really the what Amazon is to authors and to books, iTunes is to podcasting. 85% of my downloads and listens at this point come through iTunes. And I'll tell you, there's a couple directories out there like SoundCloud and Stitcher Radio that are really making some headway, and it's exciting to see. But right now, iTunes is still the big elephant in the room. So within iTunes, you have 16 different categories. You know, to give a couple broad ones, there's obviously sports, there's politics, there's religion, there's business, there's health, etc. And so within Entrepreneur on Fire, my niche within that broad category is business. And then specifically within that niche of business is management, marketing, and careers. So within the overall broad business section, Entrepreneur on Fire is consistently a top 10 rate podcast. You know, you have Dave Ramsey, who really holds down the number one spot 95% of the time because he's syndicated in, you know, thousands of radio stations and he's been podcasting for a long time and he's a great podcaster and he has an amazing following. But, you know, I'm right there with him. I'm right there with him, with Jim Cramer, with APN Marketplace, with a different NPR podcast. Tim Ferriss has an amazing podcast that ranks in the top 10. So Entrepreneur on Fire is a podcast that gets listened to, Perry. I have over 809,000 listens just last month, the month of August of 2014, as we're speaking in September, and over 9 million downloads to date. So there's a massive audience of people that are out there seeking to learn what it takes to be an entrepreneur, to start their own thing, to find their passion or to find their expertise or to find their zone of genius and to drive forward with it. And that's really the niche that Entrepreneur on Fire fits into.
Well, so I don't know intentionally or not, but you've done a couple things right that I think are really key is I think we can all agree that podcasting is growing more than 10% a year, probably 20 or 30. I mean, it's a huge growth area, right? As opposed to like, well, radio isn't exactly growing, right? Okay. And you're the number one guy in at least like the general entrepreneurship category. I mean, that's certainly not what Dave Ramsey is. And you could maybe say Tim Ferriss does what you do, but not exactly. So, you know, you're a little,
and
at
he's
least
very sporadic, you know, he's like once every 10 days.
Oh, well, you're right. And then you're the only one that is serving the hyper responsive customers. So you have, you know, what Richard Koch would call a star business. And a star business has really no ceiling for growth or less ceiling than any other kind of business, right? You're in a growing niche and you're number one. There's nobody ahead of you that you have to like shove them out of the way, which could be very difficult and expensive. So it's like you're on an open highway with no speed limit.
I completely agree with that, and I think it's a really well-chosen words by yourself about, you know, whether intentionally or unintentionally. And to be 100% transparent, it started very unintentionally, Perry. It was just an opportunity that I saw.
Yep.
But then as I started to gain momentum and to see success, then I became very intentional about it. And then I started saying, okay, these are the steps I need to take to further distance myself from the competition, to further dominate this niche that I find myself out in front of right now. And that's why back in October of 2013, so coming up on a year ago, I had only been podcasting for about a year at that point, and I launched Podcasters Paradise, which was a community to teach people how to create, grow, and monetize their podcast. And a lot of people were saying, who's this guy that's only been podcasting for a year? I think he is opening up this community to teach other people how to podcast. And you know what? They were right in a lot of ways, Perry, but fortune favors the bold, and nobody else had done it. So I said, well, if nobody's going to do it, just like I stepped up into this daily interview format podcast void, I'm going to step up into this other void of creating a community to teach people how to create, grow, and monetize a podcast. And we're not even at the year point right now, and we've already brought in over 1,300 members into Podcasters Paradise, which, by the way, is a community that costs $1,297 to join. So we generated well over $1 million in revenue since we've launched the community less than a year ago. And it's further distanced myself from the competition because now there's been other people that have tried to mimic the success of Podcasters Paradise, but it's too late because I've already got the best in class. Why would anybody choose anything else?
So you really are running two star businesses.
I like how you think, Perry.
Well, hey, you know, let's make it a simple, right? So, so let's talk about Entrepreneur on Fire. You know, there are so many choices that you have about how to do it. It's almost easy to not even know what your assumptions are. So, like, okay, so for example, when you started it, how did you intend to make money with it?
So this is a really important question because as entrepreneurs, we can never shy away from turning our time and our effort into a viable business. And I was very cognizant of that from day one because, listen, I was in corporate finance for almost 2 years with John Hancock. Like, I know how the world works. I know the importance of creating viable businesses. And I never shied away from that with Entrepreneur on Fire. However, Perry, I will say, because of decisions that I made in my past, which were good decisions, not the ones to just, you know, not the ones that like join law school when it obviously wasn't for me and I quit a semester later, but I made a lot of great financial decisions throughout my life, which put me in a very enviable situation, which was, you know, here I was, 32 years old, no debt, you know, a couple $100,000 in the bank, very little responsibility. So not an endless runway. I mean, you know, I would have run out of money at some point.
Yep.
But a runway that allowed me to really kind of follow Albert Einstein's words, which I did build my business foundation off of, which is try not to become a man of success, but rather become a man of value. And Perry, I knew that I was a nobody in the online space because I had never even dipped my right toe in there. So I knew that I had to just put my nose to the grindstone and focus not on monetizing at the beginning, but on creating such massive, consistent value that my audience would grow and swell to the point that they would tell me when it was time to monetize. And I'll tell you, it took me almost 9 months to get to that point of daily episodes of grinding away, of making it happen before I had my first month that I wasn't in the red. So I, you know, had to invest in myself in a lot of ways, and I had that cushion that allowed me to do so, but I went into it with the mindset of I'm going to build an online audience. I'm going to build a tribe, and then once it's big enough, you can't ignore me, and that's exactly what happens.
Okay, so, you know, this is a very common problem where you need a buyer and a seller, a marketplace needs a buyer and a seller. In your case, you need content and you need audience. And, well, hey, once you have it and once you got 800,000 downloads a month and all this kind of stuff. Like, well, then it's easy to get people on the phone and everything. But, you know, that's not easy at first. And, like, for me, like, I get lots of requests for interviews. And, you know, in my heart, I would love to, like, help them all. But I just can't. And so my staff, like, they have this whole set of criteria, and they go check people out. And, you know, you guys requested, and, well, we checked you out. Oh, yeah, you know, this is good. But when you were starting, you didn't have any of that. Plus, you didn't have any audience. So, you know, chicken and egg, like, what did you do?
So from day one, I did know the importance of investing in myself and building the right relationship. So I went out. I got that mentor that was that person, Perry, that was already at the place that I wanted to be, a successful podcaster who was monetizing on some levels and had been doing it for a number of years.
Okay.
And she was very plugged into the podcasting space. And the first thing she said was, John, come on down with me. We're going to go to Blog World in New York City. This is back in June of 2012. She said, I'm speaking there. I'll introduce you to other speakers, and you'll get to build some relationships that you need to build. So, you know, Perry, I knew that I was well away from turning Entrepreneur on Fire into a business that was generating decent income, because I was still well away from even launching my podcast at that point. But I knew that investing in this relationship was so critical. And that trip ended up being the spark that led it all, because I went down with my mentor under her little wing, and, you know, and she was a speaker. So she introduced me to all of the big names in my industry at that time, you know, the Michael Hyatt and the Michael Stelzner and the Pat Flynn's of the world that were at Blog World speaking and really attracting big audiences and people that love them. And because I was the mentee of their friend, Jamie Tardy, who was my mentor, and I got to go to the speakers parties and get to talk to them and not just be an attendee like one of the thousands, but actually be somebody that, you know, I could spend a couple minutes sharing with them my idea for Entrepreneur on Fire. And that trip, Perry, gave me the first couple yeses that I was then able to go back and say, you know, hey, Perry, I'm about to launch a podcast called Entrepreneur on Fire, and it's going to be a 7-day-a-week podcast. I already have Michael Hyatt, Pat Flynn, Michael Stelzner in the lineup. Mm-hmm. And to a lot of people, that was all the social proof they needed at that time. Well, hey, if Michael Hyatt and Pat Flynn are willing to spend 25 minutes, it's probably worth my time too. And I was able to build up 40 interviews over that first summer of fire, I call it. And by the time I launched, I was daily, and I never had trouble filling those slots again.
Well, would you say that a lot of people skip the step, especially online people, they skip the step of a real rubbing elbows, face-to-face set of relationships, and they think that they could just do everything virtually? Could you comment on that?
I think 99% of entrepreneurs and wantrepreneurs skip that step, Perry, because they're trying to save a couple dollars on travel and on hotels and on tickets. And it is the exact opposite of what you should be doing. You're being penny wise and pound foolish. I mean, Entrepreneur on Fire just last month generated $282,000 in revenue. And you think that I regret the $1,000 a month that I was spending to have Jamie Tardy as my mentor? You think I regret the $1,000 I spent on the tickets to go to Blog World in New York City? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what catapulted everything.
You know, relationships, I mean, yeah, we all do have friends that we've never met in person that we actually have a pretty good online relationship with, but it's not very many, right? And it's not that many. And you know, it's really funny to listen to this, because my Google AdWords career started at Ken McCarthy's System Seminar. It did not start online. It started offline. It started with an actual chairs and a room and people sitting in the chairs and going to a bar and having drinks with people. And that it's so much easier, right? And then, you know, you email that person the next week and like, oh, hey, yeah, that was a great conversation. How you doing? You know, it's not like, well, some stranger showed up in my inbox and now I have to decide if they're, you know, a serial killer.
So well put, Barry.
So, all right. So you started by building your panel of speakers first.
Exactly.
Okay. So content first, audience second.
Yes, because I was under the impression at that time, which again, thankfully, I was unintentionally aware, but now I'm intentionally aware that in podcasting, it really is one of those things that if you build it, they will come. And to that level, what I mean is that if I was willing to consistently put enough free, valuable content out into the universe, that my audience would find me. And that's the beautiful thing about podcasting is that you have places like iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and SoundCloud that have massive directories and they are attracting hundreds of millions of people every single day to their sites searching for content. And they're willing to display you in your niche, in your podcast. And especially back when I launched Entrepreneur on Fire, there wasn't really many business podcasts that were interviewing entrepreneurs. And there was none that were doing it 7 days a week. And so that was really the impetus that got that ball initially rolling.
You know, I think it's really interesting because I was one of my friends started a podcasting company in 2005. And what he was doing and why is completely irrelevant. But what I see here is, you know, podcasting had been around a long time before you and even various other people said, hey, you know, this is going to grow. And, you know, if I start planting seeds here and watering them, they are eventually going to turn into something. Like, I mean, it sounds like somebody could have done what you did a long time before you did it, but they didn't.
It's true, but I do actually have one kind of slight asterisk there.
Okay.
And it's a one word, actually, and that one word is smartphone. The Ooh. Smartphone changed everything, Perry, in the podcasting game. It's why podcasting died kind of a slow and painful death when it first came around in 2004, 2005. And it's why it had this kind of out of nowhere resurgence in 2010, because before there was a pretty annoying barrier you had to get over for the average consumer, the average non-techie consumer to listen to a podcast. But with the smartphone becoming in 2010 was the first year that over 50% of the population had smartphones in their hands, which is a computer in your pocket. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, the podcast revolution happened, because now people, without any barriers to jump over, could just click iTunes, podcast, play, and boom, it's playing wherever they are, running along the beach, in their car, you name it. It's 24/7 on demand, and it was simple. And it took that smartphone to make it simple, and it's only gone easier since.
Well, okay. So I'm glad you brought that up. So I guess what I would get out of that story is that sometimes really good ideas can't take off and fly until some technology comes into play or some shift happens. So that shift happened and you started Entrepreneur on Fire right in that sweet spot.
Right in that sweet spot. And you know what? I mean, a lot of life is luck and timing, and both of those things were in my favor.
Well, very good. So, Entrepreneur on Fire, that program, aside from your, you know, podcast training program, just within Entrepreneur on Fire, what do you do to monetize? How do you make money from that?
Right. So, I'll share with you in ascending order the top five ways that I monetize from the podcast. And this is in ascending order. So the fifth way that we monetize, and this is just, I'll even get specific with numbers in the month of July, because we publish all of our income reports on our website. So it's out there for anybody to see. Number five is affiliate income. You know, that's when we recommend Bluehost or, you know, conferences or lead pages or any tools, products, and services that we utilize. And we drive people back to our website and we say, hey, go to the resources page. You can see what we recommend. If you do use that, you know, we get a commission on that. And that generated over $8,000 for us in the month of August alone. Number four would be one-on-one coaching. When you're a podcast host, Perry, you become an authority figure. And people, especially that want to start replicating what you've done, are willing to pay big bucks to be mentored by you. Huh. And it costs $3,000 a month for one 20-minute phone call and reasonable email access. And I have four mentees on a month-to-month basis. You know, I will share that I've actually cut that part of my business out going forward. Even though it generates $12,000 a month, which is incredible money, it's not worth my time at this point because right. I can do other scalable, leverageable things that I'm moving into.
Yep.
Number three is our mastermind, Fire Nation Elite, where my massive audience, Fire Nation, a number of them have raised their hands and say, we want more. We want to be part of an elite mastermind community. So they pay $200 a month to be part of the Fire Nation Elite Masterminds, which generates $16,000 of recurring revenue every single month, all directly from podcast listeners of Entrepreneur on Fire. Number two is sponsorship income. I generate every single podcast episode a little under $2,000 of revenue for my two sponsors of Entrepreneur on Fire. They pay about a little under $1,000 each, and I have two sponsors per show. So every single month, Entrepreneur on Fire is generating a little over $50,000 in sponsorship revenue alone. And Perry, an exciting stat about that is I'm booked out through 2014. Like it is that high of demand that sponsors are willing to pay that much money to be on my show. So that is guaranteed 50+K every single month from here until 2014, and the numbers will even be higher in 2015 because you get paid by the sponsors according to your download numbers, which for my show is always growing. And then by far our number one income revenue generator are the products and services that we create. I already mentioned Podcasters Paradise, which routinely generates over $150,000 every single month. And then we have a secondary product that we launched off of that, which is called Webinar on Fire, where I teach people how to create and present webinars that convert. Because what was really interesting about that, Perry, is that 87% of our Podcasters Paradise sales for our community were happening on these live webinars that I do every single week. And people started asking, well, John, how are you creating and presenting a webinar that's converting so well every single week? And I was like, light bulb, next product. Yeah. And now we've done over $100,000 in the last 2 months and that product alone because it was out there. My audience told me they needed it, and we filled that void.
Wow, that's excellent. Now, could you also give me a breakdown of where does the traffic come from? I think people would be really curious to know that.
Yeah, so 85% of my listeners are either listening from their iPhone or from iTunes specifically, like downloading from iTunes on their computer onto their tablet or onto their iPod or any kind of MP3 device. So that's 85% of my listens. The other 15-ish percent are coming from devices like Androids, which also have podcast apps, Stitcher Radio and SoundCloud, which are the other two big directories. And what's really cool about podcasting, by the way, which sponsors love, is that your stats that you can pull up are so exact. Like I know that 76.2% of my listeners are from North America. You know, I know that 12.3% of my listeners are from Australia or New Zealand. You know, I know I can pull up individual states. I mean, the demographics and the geography and the traffic source data you can get from your podcast are incredible. And when you share that with your sponsor, they get excited because they're used to radio or TV or Nielsen at, you know, they don't know where the heck and who the heck's listening. But with podcasts, it's all right there in black and white.
Wow. So now what's your best sense of how these people actually heard about you?
I feel like it's a lot of organic traffic coming through iTunes. I think it's a combination, number one, of people going into iTunes and being like, I want to listen to free on-demand targeted content. Let's go to the business section. Okay, let's kind of scan the top business podcast. Okay, Dave Ramsey. Okay, I get it. He talks about debt and like not like buying or not renting a house or whatever. And, you know, and then I see like Susie Orman. Okay, she's telling you to, you know, to you know, put money in your IRA. And oh, what's this, like Entrepreneur on Fire? Like that's the number three ranked business podcast right now. Like interviewing successful and aspiring entrepreneurs. Like that sounds interesting. And plus, I rank really high for keywords like entrepreneur. In other words like that that are really highly searched within iTunes. But number two, Perry, and this is the second unintentional absolute gold mine of Entrepreneur on Fire. Every single day, a new interview goes live on Entrepreneur on Fire. That means that every single day, my first email that goes out in the morning is to my guest whose interview just went live. And I'm saying, Perry, you just rocked Fire Nation. The interview is now live. I would be honored if you would share your journey with your audience. Here's all the links to do so. And I make it so easy. So 7 days a week, Entrepreneur on Fire is being shared to a massive audience, many of whom have never heard of Entrepreneur on Fire before, that are becoming listeners, subscribers, and evangelists day after day after day.
That is fabulous. Was that, did you know that that was going to be an advantage before you started this, or did you accidentally discover that?
Unintentional, accidentally discovered it. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world in hindsight, but I was just like, you know, at the time I was just like, I just want to interview these people because they have great stories to tell. I didn't think about the leveraging of the audience aspect of it until I started getting into it.
Right, and that means you're getting everybody's, not just average customers, you're getting their hyper-responsive, I want to consume content customers, right? So you're skimming the cream off of 1,000 herds.
That's a great analogy.
That's really good. Okay, so now you have this very influential podcast, and now you've got people beating your door down, and they want to be on your podcast, and now you have to be selective.
That's a switch that was flipped, Perry. And, you know, when I first started, one of the major things that I heard from my mentor and others was, John, you're going to spend all your time trying to mine guests for your show, and then you're just going to run out. And the reality is, as I sit right now, I get over 100 inbound requests every single month for people pitching themselves or having themselves being pitched for Entrepreneur on Fire. And so now it's completely, you know, a job on the other end of the spectrum of me having to siphon through and figure out, you know, who really, you know, makes the best sense for my audience.
So do you have any interesting criteria or ways of making that decision that would be interesting to hear about?
Well, I can tell you my favorite and best way by far of how I get my guests for my show, Perry, is by relying on my past guests whom I think really knocked it out of the park. So for instance, if you, Perry Marshall, ever emailed me and said, hey, John, there's this guy, William Harrison, who I think would be amazing for your show, you know, just because of X, Y, and Z. If you want an intro, I'd be happy to do so. Every single time I respond to those, yes, absolutely, I would love that because I know that guests like you are just going to be giving me and delivering amazing. So that probably makes up over 50% of my guests now are recommendations from other guests, and I love those.
Wow. Okay. So that means that you get, end up getting sent these really interesting stories and people. So, like, give me an example or two of, like, really interesting people that you would have never thought of or guessed or
Yeah. So what was really cool was not too long ago, I was interviewing a guy that just has a pretty cool little story and entrepreneurial journey down here in San Diego. And we finished the interview. He's like, wow, John, like I was really blown away by how you handled this whole process. You know, one of my side gigs is I work for Brian Tracy. Would you ever want to have him on the show? And I'm like, I would love to. Within a week, he had hooked it up where – because he worked with Brian Tracy for a number of years, that he was able to get Brian Tracy locked down. And then iTunes got wind of the fact that I was interviewing Brian Tracy. you know, because I was obviously telling everybody about it. And they reached out to me and said, John, we want to feature you in that interview on the homepage of all of iTunes. And so that became this huge event where it was myself and Brian Tracy on the cover of iTunes. You know, it looked like I was interviewing him live, like in a studio.
Right.
And so it gave me like all this credibility that I didn't necessarily deserve, but it was credibility nonetheless. And I had a great interview with Brian Tracy and it was amazing. And, you know, now he's one of those people that when I reach out to, you know, other entrepreneurs like a Mark Cuban or something like that, I can say, you know, hey, I've had past guests, you know, like Brian Tracy on my show, and that kind of means something.
So, all right. So now, John, you're in the driver's seat of this big rig, and it is no longer, you know, just John's little show, and you've got this large audience. And you've got influential people that want to play ball with you. And I imagine you probably feel a sense of responsibility to your listeners that, you know, you need to make this thing grow and flourish and do something good in the world. Was that ever like an uncomfortable thought? Like, oh my goodness, like I'm actually playing in the big leagues now. I might.
I really embrace it, Perry. And I think one reason I'm able to embrace it is because I'm still able to put things in perspective. You know, I mean, I've had to give an after action report to a 4-star general after just getting back from a night mission where, you know, my platoon of 4 tanks and 16 men, you know, just raided this, you know, terrorist compounds. And, you know, that was a big deal. That was life and death. You know, that was like real deal Holyfield stuff. And, you know, now it's like I get to talk to amazing people and I get to do incredible things. But at the same time, you know, it's fun and I enjoy it. And it's not bullets aren't flying and bombs aren't exploding. And I'm able to kind of keep that perspective, you know, when I do get those kind of opportunities and, you know, things start to kind of spiral pretty quickly. I'm like, you know what? Let's just remember that, you know, this is a big rig, but it's pretty fun.
Yeah. So, you know, in other words, you've just decided not to take yourself too seriously.
I do not take myself seriously.
Well, that's good. Well, I really want to salute you for what you've done. And you've come rocketing through. And do you find that, you know, the parties you're getting involved to and the conversations you're having are any different than the ones that you were doing 3 years ago?
100%. I really feel, you know, like I look around every time I'm at the ones that I'm currently going to and I'm like, you know, these are my people. Like these are the 5 people that Jim Rohn says that I want to be spending the majority of my time with. All ships rise in a high tide. And getting to hang out with the people that I do now, I just continue to feel my ship and my tide rising higher. And I just love every minute of it.
So what would you say to a person who's, well, let's say that he quit law school and then he had a nice job and he decided like that's not really scratching his itch either and he wants to do something entrepreneurial, but it's like, well, I could start a daily podcast, but I think somebody already thought of that. but I really need to find something that's just, boy, I would love to be doing something as interesting as John Lee Dumas. So is there some advice you would have for that person who hasn't quite found their groove yet?
Yeah, I would really stress the fact that you just need to start working your creative muscle. And to work that creative muscle, you need to listen to the podcast that inspire you. You need to read the books that inspire you. You need to listen to the audio books that get you fired up. You need to work that creative muscle. You need to sit down for a week straight and every single day you need to write out 10 things that fire you up. And then you need to write down 10 things that you're good at, that you're an expert at, that other people think you're good at. And then you need to see the intersections of those two lists and be like, where's my zone of genius within these intersections here? Like, what am I not only passionate about and excited about, but also good at and also have some expertise at? And you know what? It's not going to come to you right away. It took me 6 years, but you know, I wasn't working my creative muscle. So if you're willing to do these type of things to work your creative muscle, you know, that aha moment will come. It's just a matter of when, but that creative muscle has to be worked and you need to have patience for that. But then once you do have that aha moment, I mean, you saw what I did. I just, you know, went balls to the wall, invested in myself with a mentor, with a mastermind, went to conferences, launched a podcast 7 days a week. I just went all out, and that's what it took. You know, it was like the all-out blitz. And sometimes that's the only way to sack the quarterback and to win the game.
That's very good. Well, and if you're going to exercise your creative muscle, that means making space to actually do that.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
so true.
Like, you know, you say, well, you know, you should come up with a list of 10 things every day. Well, that means like you're going to stop everything else you're doing, and you're going to stop tweeting and texting and whatever else you're, you know, and like, okay, I am going to focus my energy on cracking this riddle.
Right.
Could you give me a little bit of an idea what it was like when you were, you know, kind of banging around in the pinball machine yourself in that process? And we'll wrap in a second, but just, can you describe how you, I don't know, what was your, was it a ritual or what, how did you do that?
I had accountability partners, and that's what's so important about getting that mentor and about joining that mastermind of like-minded entrepreneurs who you are willing and committed to holding each other accountable, so that when you know you start throwing some ideas against the wall, you can have people tell you like, no, you're going in the wrong direction, or no, just don't give up now. Like, keep going, like push through that barrier that's coming up in front of you. And you know, that's the really powerful thing about surrounding yourself with those like-minded entrepreneurs. And there's just, you know, there's so many themes, Perry, that come up when you interview over 700 successful and inspiring entrepreneurs. But almost the, well, I would say the most consistent theme that has cropped up over and over again are that the guests of Entrepreneur on Fire are all committed to surrounding themselves with a mastermind and with mentors and with like-minded thinkers and blocking out those that are Debbie Downers or Don Doolittles in the world. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I totally agree. And I would not be caught dead without mentors. I would not be caught dead without a mastermind. I've said that for years. And I think also I want to salute the fact that you – the Entrepreneur on Fire guy held his own feet to the fire.
Yes.
You know, like, hey, I am serious about this. And, you know, kind of a burn the boats mentality, right?
It was a Cortez burning of the boats on the Mexican shore, and there was just no going back.
Oh, that's great. Well, John, where do people go to find out more about you and more about Entrepreneur on Fire?
Perry, all the magic happens at eofire.com, and we do a free live podcast workshop for anybody that's like, oh, this podcasting thing is, it does sound pretty cool, where we just teach people how to create, grow, and monetize their podcasts. It's live every week. I answer people's questions at the end. You know, I love it. It's one of my favorite things that I do. And you can check out our next one, which, again, we hold every week at podcastersparadise.com.
Hey, that's great. John, thank you for your time today. And thank you for a great story. And want to salute you for stepping in and creating something that people want and need. And great to hear that story.
Perry, thank you so much. It's been a true honor.